Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss. I call shots
like a boss. In the gloss. My lip gloss,
I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood
in my body. When it drops, ooh, I can't take my eyes off. Good morning, everyone. I am David Gow, the boss, and sitting next to me is Carla Dawson, the gloss. Ron Culver behind the glass. Ron, you didn't like my first start.
No, they switched their microphones on you again.
Oh, they did. Okay, well, the second time...
It was your phantom start today.
...is the better time. Absolutely. All right, and the third time was better for the Bucks last night, defeating the Nets in a must-win game. They had to pull it off. They did it. They got star performances from two of their players.
And if I told you the Bucks were going to win a game in which 86 points were the total of the win, would you believe me?
Not with that Nets offense.
Woo!
And that the game would be that close, too. Now, the Nets, of course,
83.
Are playing James Harden on the bench. He's got the hamstring problem. And I'll tell you, the one thing about that game is that, at the very least, it extends that series and maybe forces James Harden to get back on the court more quickly. I mean, I know the Nets would love to win it, to rest Harden, not to use him until the next series. But this, if it becomes competitive, if the Bucks win game number four at home, then there's going to be a push to get Harden back on the court for the Nets.
I thought exactly the same thing driving in this morning. I thought Harden, he will not be there, I doubt, for game four. But he's going to be there in this series, and he probably shouldn't be. And honestly, between KD and Kyrie, that should be enough firepower to get through the net, get by the Bucks.
Well, it certainly was in the first two games. It was not last night. And
because
then
it was a defensive game. That 86-83 score was like a score from the early 90s.
Ah, the glory days.
Where defense won championships.
I was at my best in the 90s.
And, you know, Brooklyn is not at its best on the defensive end of the court ever. So
well,
Brooke
sure
Lopez
were,
was a big key for the Bucks last night.
They sure were last night. All right, and we'll look at the Jazz victory over the Suns, all that later in the show. But when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Travis Sawchick. He is an MLB expert for The Score, and we're going to ask him, has Gerrit Cole become the face of the scandal?
Spider sits down beside you.
What does MLB do with its latest baseball scandal? Travis Sawchick up next here on The Boss and the Gloss.
It's the boss.
In the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, we're hoping momentarily to be joined by Travis Sawchick of The Score. He's an MLB expert. And we're hoping that he could make sense of spider tack. I mean, spider tack is a substance that we did not even know existed. It's a little sticky, isn't it? And sticky for all of MLB right now because they just don't need another cheating scandal.
My gosh. I mean, we're going for the trifecta. It started with the steroid era in the late 90s.
Yep.
Then it went to the sign-stealing era, which, you know, culminated here in Houston. And now we're into the performance-enhancing sticky era, the spin rate era, basically.
Well, we're dealing with – I mean, it's not like baseball is completely over the sign-stealing scandal in the sense that when the Astros were on the road, when they were playing the Red Sox, they had to deal with all the fans basically booing them, calling them out for cheating. And so you've still got sort of an echo of that scandal. And then this one and all that that entails, pitchers like Gerrit Cole being put on the spotlight. In fact, we ought to hear that Gerrit Cole piece. If, Ron, you can play it. It is very almost comical now that Gerrit Cole put on the spot, asked about whether he was enjoying a little spider tack, was really ill-equipped to answer the question. Let's hear from Gerrit Cole. Well, he's going to join us in just a second. We need him live here, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. We need him live here. I have a lot to talk to him about.
You've got a lot of questions for him. Well, it's just a dark day for baseball to have this come up again. And then you've got a manager like Davey Roberts there in Los Angeles basically saying there's no problem at all.
That's not really cheating.
It's not really cheating.
But it is clearly spelled out in Major League Baseball's rule book. It's just a matter of MLB not enforcing it. And that's what, interestingly enough, LA Dodgers pitcher Trevor Bauer has been very clear that, yes, pitchers are using foreign substances. He kind of started this whole thing. And he's calling for Major League Baseball to deliver a clear policy about, are you going to enforce the rules or not? I mean, I kind of have to laugh that he is doing this.
Well, I guess what we have is there is a clear policy, but
it's
MLB
not
has not enforced it traditionally. There certainly have been a lot of moments where the MLB has just looked away. Now, let's ask Garrett Cole whether he has ever used spider tack. Here he comes.
And have you ever used spider tack while pitching?
I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. There are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players. And, I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. And I've stood pretty firm in terms of that, in terms of the communication between our peers and whatnot. Like I mentioned earlier, this is important to a lot of people that love the game. And this is including the players in this room, including fans, including teams. And so if MLB wants to, legislate some more stuff, that's a conversation that we can have, because ultimately we should all be pulling in the same direction on this.
So there it is. He's basically saying, yes, I'm doing it.
If you can't say no, you're saying yes. And honestly, the pregnant pause when asked that question, that says it all. And to me, he just completed the mandatory 500-word essay and said absolutely nothing. So there you go.
Listen, you have a man friend in your life. If you went home to him and said, did you cheat on me?
Right.
And he answered, well, I don't know how to answer that question. What's your conclusion?
Bye-bye,
small fry.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. I'm out of here.
Oh, come on.
I mean, yeah.
Now, he didn't say yes. He just said, well, he's not sure.
Like I said, if you can't say no, it's a yes.
Oh, come on now, Carla.
But is it 100% cheating when everyone's doing it?
Yeah. Then what about that?
Ask Dave Roberts. Yes.
Is that okay?
I'm a woman of principle.
If everyone is doing it,
everyone's doing it, Carla. Be nice to your man friend. He's not any different than anybody else.
You all can gang up on me, but I came with gloves this morning.
Oh,
Dave,
man.
That's like the best analogy I've heard so far. It's like,
it is pretty good. I'm going to hand it to you.
Yeah, if I ever said that to my wife, I'm asking if I can sleep on your couch, David.
Not your couch. You would not be in your house.
No.
I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah, it might be the one that's on the curb.
Honey,
for trash pickup, for bulk pickup day. Absolutely it would be.
Honey, I'm just not sure how to answer that question.
Wow.
It's confusing. Well, it's not confusing that he's doing it. And so where we sit now is, MLB has a rule. And if they're going to have the rule, they need to enforce it. And it needs to be, as he noted, universal. And everybody needs to be on the same page. You can't have some pitchers able to use it and some abiding by the rule.
No, that's right. And, the interesting thing is, and this is where I have an issue with Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred. Let's go to the cheating scandal. Let me be clear. Hey, the Astros admitted it, okay? It wasn't good. It was bad. It was basically player-driven with the exception of Alex Cora, and that was stated in the decision that went to the accusations. They are not the only ones that were cheating. But Major League Baseball says, oh, gosh, I don't want to make the sport look bad, so we're going to forget about how the Red Sox cheated when they won the World Series in 2018 with the Apple Watch sign stealing, and we're going to forget about the Dodgers and Yankees that are now being called out for this kind of sticky substance that their spin rate. I mean, Garrett Cole is the best pitcher in the game, arguably for sure. And
Trevor Bauer is no slouch.
He is no slouch. And they don't like each other either, Trevor Bauer and Gerrit Cole. That's a long history. But Major League Baseball is trying to – they're not trying to protect the integrity of the game. They're trying to protect their own reputation.
Yep.
And by doing that, now there's going to be all this infighting where you've got Josh Donaldson, you know, MVP, saying Gerrit Cole's spin rate changed when that SI report came out, pointing out the Yankees and the Dodgers using sticky substance. We hit off him. He had 5 hits, 5 runs in 5 innings versus the Rays. That's not a Gerrit Cole night. So all of a sudden, I mean, it's interesting, and if we ever get Travis on the phone, if we have our MLB guest later, I'd love to ask, is just the announcement of the sticky substance that the Major League Baseball is going to start to enforce, like checking pitchers' gloves, is that enough to curb this issue?
Well, it is interesting. Some have speculated that MLB has surfaced this issue now in order to create a divide between two player groups, the hitters and the pitchers, mm-hmm. as Major League Baseball enters into discussions with the union and
the
new collective bargaining agreement. And that is a divide, right? The pitchers versus the hitters. And there is money.
Offense is down.
Yeah, and there's money involved because hitters who have great stats get more, paid more. And so if the pitchers have an advantage that are that is changing the nature of the game and is affecting the way that hitters are performing, that will affect their pocketbook. It really skews the dollars toward the pitchers away from the hitters. And so, yes, there is financial matter. There are financial matters at stake in this one.
Well, you know, Major League Baseball really needs to be concerned, and I think that they are, about their fans, okay? Obviously, they want the fan support. That's their gate revenue. That's what drives everything.
Yep.
I think it's interesting to note, though, in the era of cell phones, that it is no small factor that fans have videos.
Yep.
And fans come to the games. And fans have a video of Trevor Bauer in his T-shirt and jogging shorts working his glove, putting some substance on there. He was very obvious. Now, Trevor Bauer is a polarizing character, and he will do what he wants. He probably wants to be seen doing it. He's calling for Major League Baseball to, you know, get tough and crack down. But the fans are the ones that are saying, look, I see this everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's now that era where you cannot hide. You cannot run. It's out.
Carla, I'm going to say you're 100% right in that because, remember, it was Trevor the one who called out a couple of years ago about the Astros pitchers.
About the
like
Astros.
Something's going, something's
and
fishy
think
down there.
JD was one of them for sure.
And so no one heard him. So I think now he's like, well, if you can't fight him, join him.
Yep.
And, but he's embellishing it a little bit more, like, look what I'm doing. But I will say this. I think they're – between the hitters and the pitchers, I think there is a happy medium that wants to
sure.
be made because I think the hitters are glad that there's some sort of sticky stuff that's being used so that way they don't have a 100-mile-per-hour fastball coming at their face.
Yeah, right. Good
you
point.
Know, they want them to have some sort of control, I guess to the point of not having so much control that you affect the spin rate of a ball or the velocity of the ball, but just enough for you to have a lot of control on those hot, humid nights that we're about to enter, especially down here in the South, that we're about to enter, that you don't want that ball getting away from you.
Well, do you think that the position players are not loving like a Gerrit Cole 9-year, $325 million contract?
No, of course.
Who got it because he's using spider tech,
yeah.
clearly.
Trevor Bauer.
That money is gone now.
Same thing with him. I mean, he's the highest paid pitcher that ever has happened, but he's going to be the whistleblower for this because he's like, listen, none of these guys are doing it. And the only thing we have to watch out for now is there a huge drop off to these guys?
Because Gerrit Cole's outing post announcement was pretty crazy versus the Rays.
Yeah, and so then if we see
not very Gerrit Cole-ish.
His performance just kind of just dropping and dropping and dropping, then we know like, okay, well, we can start pointing fingers at you did this and you did this and you did this.
Agreed?
Well, that really brings you back to the steroid era. Remember
that
when people's home run totals soared or when their home run totals dropped because of the use. I mean, this is just a bad narrative for baseball. This is not the discussion we should all be having for the sake of baseball. A really bad day. Anyway, they'll get through it. Baseball seems to survive all this, but there needs to be real leadership on this moment. In this moment right away.
Amen. Someone's got to man up and someone's got to do this because it's not going away.
All right, when we come back, We will take a look at the NBA. There were two big games last night. Woo. Utah with the win, Milwaukee with the win. We'll unpack those series when we return here on the Boston The Gloss of the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, about 24 hours ago, the narrative was that the Bucks were done, that the Nets were on their way to the next series. Yet last night, the Bucks made a great defensive stand, and this series is 2-1 with Game 4 in Milwaukee. What stood out to you last night?
What stood out to me is that it looked like a game for four people. It looked like KD and Kyrie versus Middleton and Antetokounmpo. And it was incredible. But you look at the stats. I mean, it was anybody's game. I mean, you look at the final score, 86-83 Milwaukee. That, as I mentioned early in the earlier segment, is a 90s defense wins championships type of score. We do not see that in the modern day NBA.
Patrick Ewing was out on the court, it seemed, that 90s
style. Totally. Hakeem Olajuwon.
Those Detroit Pistons, well, it goes even further back. But yes, I understand the point. It was a very defensive game. And the defense out on the perimeter was especially strong by the Bucks. Credit them for winning when they absolutely had to dig in.
It was a defensive game because, and I'll tell you what, if you're Milwaukee, you are thrilled that you got this game.
Yeah.
Because you did not play well. Listen to this crazy stat. Giannis and Chris Middleton were 68 of the Bucks' 86 points. That's almost 80%. Those two guys, 80% of the Bucks' total points. And you look at this and you see that the Bucks as a whole shot 38% from the field. 38%. Okay, you ready for this? 19% from three. 19. Like, I think I might be able to do that. But they held Brooklyn to 84 points. Why? Because they have an incredible defense, and they had a great shooting game from Chris Middleton and a key layup by Drew Holiday, who's been absent all last night, right at the end to seal it. It was exciting.
Yeah, I mean, Holiday is their third of the big three. Of course, Harden is out. So if Holiday has a quiet night, Harden's certainly having a quiet night, and the big two beat the big two. As you noted, it felt like a four-man game. I mean, coming into this series, I was higher on the Greek Freak relative to Kevin Durant than it looked in the first two games. I mean, those first two games, it seemed like Durant was the world beater.
Ran all over
and
him.
Was so much superior to the Greek Freak. But last night, we heard Antetokounmpo made a real effort and came
Look
back.
Look at
and,
you throwing out that name like it's nothing.
It's the name I
said it. I
you
love
know,
that.
I work
you just need to recognize
my verb.
That.
I try to get around saying it all the time because Antetokounmpo is just a really hard. I finally got Tua Tagovailoa years ago.
Yeah, you do. You
that
got
was a big,
that one.
But I'd much rather go with the Greek Freak. It's just a cleaner, easier name.
Yes, but you nailed it, and I just want to give you props for that.
Congrats. I need the props for that. All right, then Utah. They are perhaps the most well-rounded team remaining in the NBA Finals. And another big night from Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, that, oh my gosh. He has had 82 points in the first two playoff games. He is the first Jazz player since Karl Malone. We're going back to those days again.
The legend.
That has scored 35-plus points in consecutive playoff games. I mean, that is astounding. And let me tell you, the Spider, he is fiery. He was kicking chairs on the sideline. Now, I am exhausted because we're on Central Time and I had to watch till the final buzzer because it was a game until then. He is just, I mean, he looked like they were down by 50. And I love that. I think that's exactly, you've got to play with that fire where you look at Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and they look just like, I mean, they're so even tempered,
yep.
Which can be very positive. But, man, you've got that little fiery Donovan Mitchell, and he was fire. Wow.
So Utah leads the series 2-0. I don't know at this point, but it just feels like the Clippers are going to disappoint again. Remember last year, they won in the first round but lost in the second. Doc Rivers was fired. Are we going to see the same narrative back-to-back years with the Clippers?
You know, possibly. And I have a theory. I have a theory to why the Clippers are losing this series so far.
Well, they need to hear it.
Okay. I'm going to call this Salty Lake City. Because I'll tell you what. Teams do not and players do not like disrespect.
Yeah.
And do you remember at the end of the season, the Clippers chose to sit their stars, not unlike something they would do, and they coughed up games to Houston, which, again, I could single-handedly beat Houston. Houston and OKC. Why? Because they did not want to face the L.A. Lakers in the first round.
Mm.
And they looked at the bracket and said, oh, I'd rather be a four seed and take Utah. I'll take the Jazz. That's no problem. And I think the Jazz said, you know what, sister? You're going to see us. We do not like it. They've got a chip on their shoulder. They are salty in Salt Lake, and they are playing like it.
Well,
that disrespect was
real. If they were tanking for tournament position, yeah, Utah could feel like that was disrespect. I also wonder about what that means for the culture of the team, that you would actually go out and be willing to have a quiet conversation in the locker room and say, hey, this is one we might just let slip away because it positions us better for a deep playoff
stars.
Run. It's just not good optics. It's not good culture. I don't think there's
it's
something
not professional.
About it. Well, it's not professional.
It's not competitive. It's not edgy. And you know what? They're currently playing. The Clippers are playing, to me, without an edge. And I think the Jazz are playing with an extra fire. And, you know, you look at Donovan Mitchell. He scored 45 in game one and 37 in game two. And, you know, Paul George and Kawhi had great games last night. But it just wasn't enough. And I just think that extra edge. And they are in Salt Lake City. Tough place to play. I get that. But, you know, you would think that the Clippers would have learned last year, having only 37 games with George and Leonard playing together. They do this rest thing way too much, and it really hurts them when it matters.
Well, they're not alone in that one.
No, they're not.
They surely last year was a poster child of the problem when you rest. Nets, of course, rested their guys. They hardly played together at all, the big three this year.
Well, you don't even need to when you have that kind of firepower.
And maybe they're just beyond that problem.
But let's give some props to Chris Middleton last night, too, because Giannis was all over the place, including terrible from the free throw line. How in the world, like really, you're a two-time MVP. Tell me, David, how do you get two 10-second violations in the playoffs from the free throw line? And he's so haughty about it and says, I'm not changing my routine.
It is amazing, isn't it?
These are tight games.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it. One, it costs your team. Two, it's just not great for the sport. It's almost like the baseball slowdown, right? When pitchers walk off the mound and strut around and then get back up on the mound and it takes forever to go on and make the next play. I mean, this is a free throw. It's not rocket science, right?
And you're an MVP. But, you know, Chris Middleton, he saved the day last night. 35 points, 15 boards, 15. He was 3 of 6 from three, shooting 50%, but the team was 3 of 12. So when you think about that they've got the defensive edge with Brooke Lopez and the fact that Brooklyn doesn't play defense, if they can get that offense rolling, this is a series.
Intriguing times. I want to ask, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Dan Feldman. He is an NBA expert, and I want to ask him all about, check that, Dan Feldman. He is a writer for NBC Sports covering the NBA, and he's going to join us on the Progressive Insurance Guest Line. And I really do want to ask him, does the tightening of this series, the Bucks-Nets series, mean that James Harden needs to come back here in Game 4? Clearly the Nets would love to rest James Harden. They'd love to get him 100% for the next round. But Game 4 is a pivotal game. It gets 2-2, and it's a different series.
It starts all over. It starts all over when it's 2-2.
All right, it'll be Dan Feldman. We'll ask him about the Nets series when we return. We are the Boss and the Gloss, and this is the Sports Map Radio Network.
the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, the Boss and the Gloss. And we are on the cusp of being joined by Dan Feldman, a writer for NBC Sports covering the NBA. And the NBA playoffs well underway now. Phoenix leading Denver 2-0 in that series. Do you think the Suns are on their way to advancing?
Gosh, they have a 38-point margin of victory in the first two games.
Things look pretty promising, don't they?
Really good, and I'm super happy for CP3. And, you know, I mean, the Suns look good in general, and they look good because of their floor general. 26 assists and one turnover by CP3 so far in this series. That's nice. He's making his guys look really good.
Chris Paul is a fountain of youth.
Great leadership.
All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line, drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. And on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Dan Feldman. He's a writer for NBC Sports covering the NBA. Dan, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, how you doing?
We are doing great. Let's start with the games last night. Nets fall to the Bucks in a defensive stand. Are the Bucks now back in this series?
Yeah, they're back in the series, but the Nets really do have the upper hand, having that top talent that we know can produce consistently in the playoffs, and Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. The Nets have really come together defensively, and of course having that 2-1 series lead.
And do you think at this point, Dan, that James Harden is going to be rushed back? Is there any urgency by Steve Nash and the Nets team to just think, we got to get him out here? We don't want to get to a 2-2 tie because then the series starts at zero. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it's the playoffs, so there's always some urgency to get a player back, no matter what teams say. Like, you want to win these games. They're so meaningful. But the Nets have found an identity that's working without James Harden. They're obviously, they don't have the same offensive upside without him. He's such a talented scorer and passer. But without him, they've become better defensively. They've gotten better defensive personnel on the floor. Everything's clicking on that end. And I think most nights you're going to score better than they did last night. Three-pointers are going to fall a little better. And when you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, I think there are some diminishing returns to adding James Harden to the lineup offensively. He helps, no question. But you still have two pretty good scorers who can get you through a lot of situations.
No, it's true, but should they not be a little bit nervous? I mean, Milwaukee had a terrible shooting night, 38% from the field, 19% from three. And, you know, Giannis is 6 of 19 last night in the series so far. Two 10-second violations, and still they were able to pull out a win with Kevin Durant having 30 points, Kyrie in the 20s. You know, is there a little bit of cause to pause for some urgency here?
I mean, there's a level of concern, no question. I think nervous is too far. The Nets didn't shoot well either. I just think that the Nets have overall in this series been the better team. And you know, last night was a very close game. When the Nets have won, it's been decisively. I think that matters. The Bucks have made this far more competitive by winning a game. 2-1 is far different than 3-0. 3-0 is practically finished. So there's definitely more competitiveness in the series. But I don't think the Nets need to panic or anything.
We're talking to Dan Feldman. He's a writer for NBC Sports covering the NBA. Okay, I want to shift gears to the Clippers series. And I'm calling it the Clippers series because I just want to ask, I mean, Clippers have been so inconsistent in these playoffs. Do you think that, well, I mean, what do they need to do to get back in the series against the Jazz, who have played so well?
Well, as far as, you know, identifying why they're inconsistent, it's tough to say because it seems like on paper they have everything you want. They've got the top-end talent in Kawhi Leonard, a good supporting star in Paul George, a championship-caliber coach, a deep supporting cast, the ability to play versatility. It seems like they have everything. To get back in the series against Utah, I think the zone defense worked so well last night. I'm not sure that you can continue with that. They just don't seem to have an answer consistently for Donovan Mitchell. And you can see, okay, you could do the zone. That can work in spurts. You can put Kawhi Leonard on him. That works well in spurts. I don't know if Kawhi Leonard has the energy to defend Donovan Mitchell for the full game. Paul George hasn't been that effective on him. You can hope that Paul George is more effective. You can try and have fewer minutes with Ivica Zubac and Luke Kennard on the floor. Donovan Mitchell's really exploited them. But mm-hmm. at some point, you've got to play some of the players you have. I'm just not sure they have enough answers for Donovan Mitchell for 48 minutes. But you can try and turn it so some of the things that have worked, like the zone, like Kawhi Leonard, maybe like Paul George on him, you can have more of those matchups throughout the course of the game.
All right, I've got a couple of off-season questions I want to ask for you. Let's start with the Mavericks. Luka was so great in that series. Porzingis, seemingly an afterthought now. Is Porzingis going to be with the Mavericks next year? How can they get him involved, or do they need to go trade him for something else?
Yeah, I mean, he's making a lot of money. He hasn't been that productive. I don't think trading him is going to be easy. I don't think there's a high demand. I think there are plenty of teams that would be interested in Porzingis because of his talent, because of what he's done, because of his age. But the return isn't going to be that high considering his health status and considering his production this year. So I think the Mavericks' best bet, most likely, unless there's a team that really values him highly, their best bet is going to hope, okay, he can get healthier, be further removed from injury, have more time to develop chemistry with Luka Doncic, and you just hope that everything comes together better next year. That's not a great solution, but again, I don't think trading him is a great solution either.
You know, when you talk about him, it reminds me of Kemba Walker in Boston, who, of course, has had injuries as well. He's got a big contract. There are whispers the Celtics might like to move him along. Maybe there's a trade there between Walker and Porzingis. But let me ask
you. Ooh, you're throwing it out there.
Throwing
I like
it out
it.
There. But let me ask you about the Celtics head coach search. Who's the best fit? Who would Brad Stevens finally pick?
Yeah, it seems like it's very wide open at this stage, which is good, right? Like, Brad Stevens hasn't run a coaching search before, and I think it's good for all teams to cast a wide net, talk to a lot of people. Even if you have an idea going in of who you like, the more people you talk to, it gives you a chance to learn more, to be persuaded. There's nothing, you know, it can only be good in that way. If you're asking for one name who I guess I would consider the favorite at this point, I think Chauncey Billups is up there, but I also think it's more likely he ends up in Portland, but I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes the next Celtics head coach. I think Carol Lawson would make a lot of sense, though. You know, she has experience working with the Celtics, and by everything I've heard, you know, has just done a great job as an assistant. Very impressive in understanding the game and being able to communicate with players and teach the game. It's always a risk when you hire somebody who's never been a head coach. It is so different than being an assistant to be in charge, to have, you know, at times everybody just mad at you and to how you handle that. And so you're always, you know, taking a roll of the dice there. But I think Carol Lawson might be somebody that they're comfortable doing that with.
Wow, that would be amazing. I wonder how comfortable Boston sports fans would be with having a woman at the helm. That would be pretty exciting.
Now you got Carla's attention.
Yeah,
here.
Now my antenna is up, Dan, for sure. You know, you bring up a great point about experience, and I know rumors are Chauncey Billups is, you know, his name swirling around in Portland. I mean, I love Chauncey. He's smart. He's got emotional intelligence. He's got great leadership. However, he does have a lack of experience just being an assistant coach under Ty Lue with the Clippers. Do you think that is going to be an overriding factor, or do you think that Portland will, you know, ultimately take a chance on him?
Yeah, I do think of all the openings, coaching openings, this is the only one where I think it's over 50% the Blazers, like the team hires a specific coach, and that's Blazers with Billups. I don't think it's a lock, but I do think it's more likely than not. And yeah, it's an experience. It is a negative, right? To be in more situations, to know how to react mm-hmm. to all of them, it'd be better if he had that experience. But everything he accomplished as a player gives him a name recognition that I think tends to help in these job searches. But his playing career also really does help him in terms of being able to do the job. He is a leader. He was a smart player. I think one of the more underrated things mm-hmm. is that he had so many different roles. He was a star. He He was labeled a bust. He was a journeyman. He was a veteran leader. He was out with a long-term injury. Like, everything a player can do where he needs coaching, he's done it. He's been there. So that can only help them.
Yeah, so true. Let's take a look at the Lakers, Dan. I'd love to talk to you about them. After flaming out in the first round, shocking, I wanted to ask you two things. Like, what changes do you think they need to make in the offseason, and will they make? And I heard this week LeBron's agent Rich Paul talking about what needs to be done in L.A. and saying, you know, referring to them as us. Is this a little too close for comfort, the LeBron James Lakers Rich Paul thing? Is it helpful or hurtful that Rich Paul considers the Lakers as us?
Helpful or hurtful to whom, I think, is the key question.
I guess overall, the overall league, like how super teams are able to be developed. And, you know, I mean, I think that that's a frustrating thing as a fan to me, that you can buy championships, like what's you know, currently on the way in Brooklyn, and what happened in Miami, and what clearly got together last year in L.A. You know, so that I guess that's what I mean by hurtful in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah,
parody.
It's tricky because versions of this have been happening forever. Now, look, LeBron and Anthony Davis being on the same team, yes, there's something there. That's a super team, and Rich Paul is both their agents. Mm-hmm. There's something going on there to your question. But we, you know, he calls the Lakers us in part because they also have four of his other clients, and I don't think the Lakers are a super team because they have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Markieff Morris and Ben McLemore and Talen Horton-Tucker. So it's not just because of LeBron and AD. And this is not unprecedented either, right? Like, a lot of agents have had multiple clients, some on some teams, some on others, and agents tend to give priority to their biggest stars. So if you happen to have your top clients on a certain team, you're going to be partial to that team. You're going to be more invested and focused on that. This has raised a little more attention because Rich Paul is so notorious, and it does deserve attention. I do think people should be watching on how agents handle these things, especially the other clients. I don't know how I would feel if I were one of Rich Paul's clients on another team. That said, everybody knows the deal, right? If you hire Rich Paul, you know he's LeBron's guy and is going to be looking that direction first. When Anthony Davis hired Rich Paul, he knew that. To me, that hire meant, okay, I want to get to play with LeBron and the Lakers. Rich Paul's the best agent to steer me there. Rather than, I think some people are very conspiratorial that, oh, Rich Paul convinced Anthony Davis to leave New Orleans and go to the Lakers. I think it was the other way around more likely. And so for the league, you know, these are valid concerns, but also how do you stop players from just doing what they want within the rules?
That's the question we were talking offline.
Mm-hmm, we were.
What could Adam Silver do to stop this? And there really isn't an easy answer, right? It just, players are going to talk, players are going to recruit, players have agents, and some of this can just be orchestrated almost organically.
Yeah, I mean, the league has made some efforts with, like, a supermax contract if you stay with, you know, your original team. That maybe has helped a little bit, probably not, because the money is so great now. So, like, yeah, would I rather make $200 million or $150 million to be where I want? Like, does it matter that much at that point? When, you know, so it's tough to find solutions. Player contracts are shorter now than they used to be. Players hit free agency more often. Maybe you could go back in another direction. There'd be consequences, though. There's a reason player contracts are shorter. It's because too many players weren't providing the same value at the end of a 7-year contract, and teams hated having them, right? You hate to lose a guy, but teams were really fed up with paying a player way too much money in year 5, 6, and 7 of those contracts because they had to pay the max to keep them. And, you know, by the time the player aged, he wasn't playing as well. There are consequences either way. It's all trade-offs. I don't think the current equilibrium is so bad. On a certain level, it might be good for the league that you guys hate super teams, but you're watching them because you're curious. You want to watch them lose. People tune in to see them lose, and you need a mix, right? There are plenty of teams this year that you would not describe as bought, that were built more organically from within the draft, and I think people are tuning in to root for them.
Great stuff. That's Dan Feldman. You can read him on NBC Sports. Really appreciate your time, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Boss
and The Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Okay, one of the fun things about this NBA playoff is that when the Mavericks were kicked out, when they lost, that meant that...
To the Clippers.
Yeah, of all the remaining teams, that the franchise that's going to win the championship this year, it will be the end of a 38-year drought. All these teams, I mean, the 76ers won the championship way back.
In the 80s.
It will be the end of a 38-year drought. Because, of course, the Mavericks had won with Dirk. And then you look at the championship teams of the last 10, 12 years. All those teams are out of the playoffs now. So whomever wins this year ends a long drought.
Yeah, Cleveland, yeah. The Warriors. It's so true.
So it's
Lakers.
It's a wide-open, fun moment for the NBA to see a different franchise come out on top.
Yeah, I love it. Bring it on.
Well, we've had some fun with the NBA in the first hour. And we will hit more NBA. A little MLB, some NFL when we return. You're listening to The Boss and The Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.